They called her Miss Gable. And, you know, the line that always stuck with me was, she didn't just man the front desk. She was grown into it.
Yeah.
And to get that, you have to picture the most generic corporate office you can imagine.
Oh, absolutely. The beige carpets that just drink the light.
Exactly. Mm. The sound, that constant hum from the fluorescent lights overhead, the one that you just know is giving you a headache by 3 p.m.
It's an environment that's specifically designed to have no personality. It's supposed to be predictable, efficient, maybe even boring.
Antiseptic, right. A place where nothing strange should ever happen.
It shouldn't even be possible.
And yet, in the middle of all that predictability, there was Mrs. Gable. She was this profound anomaly, mm-hmm. sitting at this ancient desk with a machine they called the operator's mate.
A massive old school switchboard.
And the legend, the sort of narrative truth we've been piecing together from the Inspector Story Files, it says she wasn't just an employee there for 40 years. She was the building. She was its nervous system.
And that really is what this deep dive is all about. We're going to try and dissect this corporate legend of Mrs. Gable because the source material is, frankly, terrifying in its detail.
It is.
It forces us to look at what happens when you fuse a person and a machine and then give that entity total control, not just over phone calls, but over space, over time, over whether you even exist.
And all of it contained within the four walls of some mid-level corporate high-rise.
It's a theme we've touched on before. You know, these systems of control. We saw it with the Monopoly files, how the system itself becomes the reward.
Right. Or erasure. Like with the Klaus Richter file.
Yeah, but that's a great point of contrast, isn't it? With Richter, they just erased his records. The absence of the man became the artifact.
Okay.
With Miss Gable, it's so much more immediate. She's not just deleting a file on a server. The file suggests she's rerouting your actual physical person, your timeline.
She's pruning reality. So the artifact, the operator's mate, it hasn't just outlived its purpose. It's absorbed its operator and, like, woken up.
And what's so fascinating and so horrifying is where that power is located. It's not in the C-suite. It's not with the board of directors. All of this reality-bending authority is sitting at the front desk.
The lowest point on the hierarchy.
It completely inverts any corporate org chart you've ever seen.
Which really brings us to the big question for this whole deep dive, the thing you have to keep in your head as we go through this.
Yeah.
What happens when the only thing between you and the exit is the person who controls the main fuse box?
We have to start at the beginning, at the core of how this even happened.
Okay, let's do it. Act I, grown into the desk. We have to start with her tenure, right? 40 years, multiple sources, all corroborated, say she's been at that desk for four decades.
I mean, think about what a company goes through in 40 years. Mergers, acquisitions, bankruptcies.
The entire digital revolution. They would have gone from typewriters to PCs to cloud computing.
Exactly. Four different keycard systems, probably. New management every 5 years. But Mrs. Gable,
yeah.
She's the one constant. She's the static sender of all that corporate chaos.
And that consistency is the first major red flag, isn't it? It proves she's not operating under a normal employment contract. Or maybe even under normal laws of, you know, biology.
Because she never leaves. The sources are absolutely clear on this.
Never takes a lunch break. Never calls in sick. She's always there.
In a normal office, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. Here, it's a design feature. Hmm. And the reason, the core rumor, is that the company hardwired her nervous system directly into the building's main fuse box.
That's the line. That's where it pivots from a weird story about a dedicated employee into pure body horror. But why the fuse box? Why not the server room if you want information control?
Well, that's the genius of it in a terrifying way. The fuse box isn't about data. It's about power. Raw electrical power.
It controls everything. The lights, the elevators, the HVAC.
The clocks on the wall, the security system, every single machine in the entire structure. By wiring her into that, they didn't just give her control over communication. They gave her control over the building's lifeblood.
She became the building's CPU, its biological central processing unit.
Exactly right. And her moods, her stress levels, they could literally cause a brownout on the fourth floor. Her thoughts become the building's electrical logic. The person and the infrastructure are one system.
And the interface for this system is the operator's mate, this big, clunky analog machine. Why that? Why not something more advanced?
I think the physical, tactile nature of it is absolutely key. We're talking about physical jacks, patch cords you hold in your hand. This isn't digital. You can't just undo a command.
When you plug something in, it's a real physical connection.
It's permanent. And the sources describe these tangled black cables running from the console into her chair, and they say they pulse like veins.
That visual is just so visceral. It's not a chip in her neck. It's a full organic integration. The building is powering her, and she is regulating the building.
It's a closed loop of perpetual corporate servitude. And that physical connection makes her power absolute. You can't hack it remotely. You have to go to the front desk. You have to talk to the person holding the patch cord.
So, okay, her baseline skills are already impressive. She knows every extension, routes every call perfectly. That's just a good receptionist.
Right, but that's just the mask. That's the mundane function that hides the supernatural one.
Which is that she can put you on hold in ways that the IT department literally cannot explain. They have no idea how she's doing it because she's bypassing their entire digital network.
She's working on an infrastructural level. Almost a metaphysical one.
And this is where the stakes just go from, you know, office politics to something completely existential. This is the detail from the files that floored me. Her most extreme power.
I know which one you mean.
The ability to transfer a call to a timeline where you were never born.
And boom, right there. The operator's mate isn't a phone. It's a temporal regulator. Those patch cords aren't just for audio signals. They're conduits for reality itself.
But wait, let's push back on that for a second. Is that just a story? Is it fear-mongering to keep employees in line? Or is there any actual evidence in the files of someone being pruned?
That's a fair question. And no, we don't have like a logbook of deleted timelines. But what we do have are dozens of accounts of near misses, people who were about to complain, who picked up the phone to call her, and then suddenly their email account is gone. Their desk is empty. No one remembers them.
So the threat is enough.
The threat is everything. She doesn't have to erase everyone. She just has to make it credible that she can. And she has.
So a simple phone call becomes an act of reality negotiation.
And if she doesn't like your tone of voice, your whole existence could be rerouted.
It really makes you rethink every frustrating customer service call you've ever been on, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. This is not customer service. This is gatekeeping reality. Which brings us right to Act Two and what happens when she doesn't want to erase you, but just punish you.
The infinite hold.
The mechanisms of erasure.
Right. So the legend of infinite hold. If Mrs. Gable thinks you're being rude, or maybe just a little too impatient.
Or you just sigh too loudly into the phone.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't just hang up on you. She weaponizes the hold button.
She doesn't just put you on hold. She puts you somewhere else. The files describe it as a static-filled void that exists between floors. A liminal buffer zone.
Liminal space.
Yeah.
It's usually temporary, right? A hallway, a waiting room.
Precisely. It's a state of transition. But she takes that brief transitional moment, the silence on the line before it connects, and she makes it a destination. A permanent, hostile one.
And the physics of this place.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's so wild. It's not just quiet. The sources say it's a place where gravity tilts sideways.
And clocks don't run right. So think about that. The fundamental laws of the universe are suspended inside this bubble. She creates. Your own body wouldn't know which way is up.
And time just stretches and warps.
It's a temporal and spatial anomaly that she can just deploy from her switchboard, all contained inside a building that probably has, you know, a Starbucks in the lobby.
The contrast is insane.
Yeah.
And the consequences for the victims.
Mm.
This is where it gets really tangible.
Yeah, the employees who annoy her, they step into an elevator on a Tuesday morning and they walk out weeks later.
Weeks. But for everyone else in the office, it's only been, what, 5 minutes?
Maybe. And they come out starving, disoriented, their clothes in tatters.
But there's that one specific, deeply weird detail that shows they've been somewhere wrong.
Their beards or their hair.
Grown in strange, inward ways.
What does that even mean? Inward growth. It's like biology itself got twisted and reversed. It's not just that they aged, it's that they were processed by a system where entropy is broken.
It's a biological scar. Proof that they were subjected to some kind of anti-time.
They were aged and unaged at the same time. And for what? Because they were snippy about a TPS report?
It's the ultimate weaponization of bureaucracy. And the terrifying part is they come back. They become these walking warnings to everyone else.
Enforcing compliance through shared trauma.
That's containment.
Yeah.
The story of Zipmiller is the next level. That's outright physical deletion.
Right. This is where we move beyond phones entirely and into her controlling physical slice.
Zipmiller. He was the mailroom guy. And the files always describe him the same way. Fast. He was the only person in that whole building with any momentum.
He was an anomaly in his own right, uncontrolled energy. And one day, he decides he's had enough. He makes a run for the exit.
Tries to leave the building for good. An act of rebellion.
An existential threat to a system built on static control. And Miss Gable just watches him. The files say she tracked his momentum like a predator.
But she doesn't yell for security. She doesn't chase him.
She doesn't have to. She just turns to the operator's mate and she patches his physical location directly into the basement incinerator line.
I mean, how? How does a switchboard reroute a person?
Well, if she controls the building's power grid, she controls every electronic lock, every elevator motor, every pneumatic tube.
Yeah.
She could, in theory, create a momentary infrastructural singularity. A weak spot in reality between where Zip is and where the incinerator is. The walls themselves are just a suggestion maintained by an electrical flow that she commands.
So she just reroutes them like a piece of mail?
Disposable corporate refuse. And the result is instantaneous. Zip vanishes. Mid-stride. Gone.
He's just absorbed by the system he was trying to escape.
But he's not entirely gone, is he? And that's maybe the most haunting part of the whole story, the legacy he leaves behind.
The pneumatic tubes.
Yeah, the tubes they used for inter-office mail. After Zip disappears, people start hearing a sound from them.
A rattling, a pinging noise.
Described as his frantic tabbing. Like he's still in there trying to send one last message out from inside the network.
It's the perfect corporate ghost story. The man is gone, but his desperate energy is trapped, echoing through the infrastructure forever.
Which confirms the whole theory, right? She doesn't just manage communication, she manages presence. And once you're absorbed, you just become part of the system's background noise.
And what's so bizarre is that this cosmic horror, it's always running parallel to the most boring everyday office problem.
Oh, absolutely. The system might be omnipotent, but it's not perfect. Which brings us to Act 3. Overheating board, weeping dial tone.
The corporate abyss.
A great title for it, because any system of total control is always stressed. It's always on the verge of breaking down.
So the files describe this one day of total chaos.
Yeah.
The operator's mate is literally overheating. You can probably smell the hot plastic. Phone lines are jammed. Everyone's complaining.
And the specific crisis that tips it all over the edge is so beautifully, horribly mundane.
Sludge. Leaking from the coffee machine.
It's perfect. This reality-bending entity can erase a man from time, but it can't handle a basic plumbing issue. The system is so focused on the big picture, it's failing at the small stuff. It's leaking.
And this is where Mr. Paxson comes in. Some poor middle manager who just wants to report the sludge.
Yeah.
He's trying to use this god-tier system to solve the most boring problem imaginable.
And Miss Gable, who is probably having the worst day in her 40-year tenure, has to decide where to send this call. Who handles cosmic-level coffee sludge?
She patches them through to upper management.
The highest authority.
And on the other end of the line, there's no voice. There's no executive. There's nothing.
Just a dial tone.
The ultimate void of authority. If Mrs. Gable is the operator, who or what is in charge of her? And the answer is nothing. An empty line.
But it's the quality of the sound that matters here, right? It's not a clean, crisp dial tone.
No. The files say it bends, it wavers.
Like it's weeping.
So what does that mean? What is a weeping dial tone?
Well, if the highest power in the building is just an automated mechanical sound, and that sound is expressing sorrow, it suggests the system itself is miserable.
I wonder if it's not sadness, but exhaustion. I mean, it's holding reality together, it's containing prisoners in liminal spaces, and now it has to deal with a coffee leak. The weeping is just the sound of total systemic burnout.
I think you're right. It's a sentient system that is a prisoner of its own power.
Hmm.
Upper management is just pure static, pure mechanical grief. And the sound is the building itself, fused to Mrs. Gable's own nervous system, just crying out from the strain of it all.
The system is all-powerful, and it's profoundly, deeply unhappy.
And this is where we have to synthesize it all for you, the listener, because understanding this is the key to surviving it.
We've got the three pieces, the fused being, which is Miss Gable, the controlled liminal space, the infinite hold.
And the crying void. Upper management, the system is complete, sentient, and miserable.
And the lesson seems to be that you can't fight it. Zip tried to flee and he became a data echo. Paxton tried to report a flaw and got routed to the system's own pain.
Any attempt to change the system just gets you absorbed by it.
Which leads us to the present day, the final chilling update.
After all of it,
yeah.
She's still there, still at the front desk. The black cables are still pulsing. The operator's mate is still plugged in.
The danger isn't in the past. It's active. It's ongoing.
Yeah.
And the final warning from the files is pretty direct. If you call the main line and she's the one who answers, you have to think very, very carefully.
Because the worst thing you can do isn't just hanging up. That might be its own kind of offense.
Exactly. The worst thing you can do is give her anything to work with. Your voice, your tone, your impatience, your frustration. Because she's just sitting there listening, waiting for a reason.
A reason to transfer you. To reroute you. To pass you into the incinerator. Or to just transfer your entire timeline to the great cosmic void where you never bothered her in the first place.
And that really brings this whole deep dive to our one-line takeaway.
Some receptionists don't just transfer calls. They reroute reality.
And that reality is happening in the most boring place imaginable.
Yeah.
Not a haunted house, but an office building with bad lighting and worse coffee.
It's the ultimate mundane horror.
So we want to leave you with one final thought to mull over. Something to think about the next time you're stuck on hold.
Yeah.
If Miss Gable controls your call, your location, and your timeline, how many versions of you are already stuck in that infinite hold?
How many times have you been slightly rude on a call and a tiny piece of your timeline was just snipped off and put in that void? Is that low hum you hear in your office just bad wiring? Or is it the sound of all your other possible selves weeping in the static?
For the full breakdown of these files and many more legends that are literally wired into the walls of corporate America, you can find the original source material and our work at Inspector Story. Thanks for diving deep with us.